Gospel reductionism replaces the Bible as the source and norm of theology with the gospel. What would a gospel reductionist edition of Luther's Small Catechism look like? Find out in the latest issues, etc. journal. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Dr. Russell Dawn details his journey from Anglicanism to Lutheranism. The free online Issues Etc. journal, issuesetc.org.
That excerpt that we ran in the Times was an adaptation of what's in our book. It really focuses on the experience of Deborah Ramirez. That was the focus of the piece. We included the additional detail about this other as yet unreported allegation because it seemed germane to the type of thing we were talking about. It was a somewhat similar incident.
I mean, I think what happened actually was that, you know, we had her name and, you know, the Times doesn't usually include the name of the victim. And so I think in this case, the editors felt like maybe it was probably better to remove it. And in removing her name, they removed the other reference to the fact that she didn't remember
okay,
it.
Okay, so in your draft for the Times, you used basically the exact words
yes,
that are in the
did.
Book that I deliberately left off the name
exactly.
because that passage begins with the name.
Yes.
And so in their removal of the name, they ended up removing
the whole
what
sentence.
Follows it.
Yes, and I mean, so I think it was just sort of an editing, you know, done in the haste of, in the editing process, as you know, for
were
closing
you,
the
were
section.
Were you involved in the decision to amend this and do the correction on the addition online to the piece?
We discussed it.
New York Times reporters Robin Progerman and Kate Kelly speaking last night on MSNBC's The Last Word with Lawrence O'Donnell, explaining why in an original draft of an essay that they published in the New York Times, they left out a very important fact, one of the allegations listed against now Justice Brett Kavanaugh. Well, the person who allegedly made the allegation doesn't recall the incident and didn't make the allegation at all. That was left out of the story. They're explaining why it didn't get in the New York Times story. They have a new book out called The Education of Brett Kavanaugh, and it's filled with all kinds of allegations. We're going to be talking about the book and the New York Times essay and the correction as well. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Welcome back. Joining us to talk about that book and the New York Times story, Molly Hemingway, Fox News contributor, senior editor of The Federalist and co-author of a new book, Justice on Trial, The Kavanaugh Confirmation and the Future of the Supreme Court. Molly, welcome back to Issues Etc.
It's great to be here with you.
There are two stories here involving the New York Times. What are they?
Well, this weekend, the New York Times published a story alleging a new allegation of misconduct against Brett Kavanaugh. It turned out it wasn't new and it wasn't really an allegation, and they forgot to include the single most important aspect of that story, which is that the alleged victim says she has no recollection of any such incident and has never made such a claim. That failure to include that exonerating information was dealt with by adding a correction after a day and then repeating the error in subsequent stories. So this is, you know, it's just an example of how media coverage of the Kavanaugh confirmation suffered from fatal journalistic flaws and how a new book written by New York Times authors suffers from that same failure of journalism.
Sticking for a moment with the New York Times essay, the reporters who wrote it have recently said that they had included the exonerating piece of information, but that their editors had removed it before publication. What do you make of that?
The women have gotten a lot of criticism for the piece, and so they, last night in an interview on national television, they blamed their editors. And while it's certainly true that editors also bear responsibility for allowing this to go to print without this key piece of information that undercut the entire story, it doesn't quite make sense what they said. And that's because reporters get to sign off on what is published. And of course, it was live for well over a day, and they never acknowledged anything on social media or otherwise. And what's more, there's evidence that they had a pattern of omitting this detail. They gave an interview on National Public Radio that was recorded last Thursday but aired on Monday, saying that there was this credible allegation, and they completely omitted the fact that the alleged victim was in no way supporting their version of events. So I don't think their attempt to avoid responsibility by blaming editors is matched by the facts.
What do you make of this phrase that is that's been bandied about in the media regarding almost any allegation against Brett Kavanaugh? They call it, it's been credibly alleged. Is that the phrase that they like to use?
I've now come to just, when I hear credible, I hear unproven or unsupported or uncorroborated, because that's basically what it means. It's a way of saying that the allegation is worth paying attention to. Well, what makes allegations worth paying attention to is evidence in support of them. It's extremely important that people take allegations of serious misconduct seriously. In order to take them seriously, there is a burden, a standard of evidence that should be coming along with the accusation. And if that standard isn't met, nobody should believe something in the absence of evidence. These reporters spent a year looking for evidence to support allegations made against Brett Kavanaugh. And they admit they were unable to find any supporting evidence. But they say that in the absence of evidence, their gut told them to believe the accusers. This is not reporting or journalism, and not to, you know, people are free to feel however they want about something. But when you are tearing down a man's reputation or a woman's reputation, it is very important that you have evidence in support of what you were doing. That didn't come, and it was no barrier for a lot of people in the media to continue their campaign of destruction, basically.
So how has the media responded to the New York Times essay and then the revelation that the essay was lacking its key fact?
On the one hand, major media are outraged that the New York Times botched this. They are condemning the reporters and their editors. They've written stories about what an embarrassment this is. But it seems that they're more upset at the execution of the smear than the fact that a smear was executed. And they, in fact, are picking up the story and running with it. They are treating the idea that someone would be impeached as a credible option when someone has been accused of something that makes no sense. That is absurd, and it is weird to treat it as if it's legitimate. The media really drove the story. Then you had some Democratic political candidates, based on misinformation, say that this should lead to impeachment. Even after the story was debunked, the stories today in major media are all about impeachment and all about continuing the storyline advanced by the reporters who messed up the original story.
You have been at pains to remind us that this isn't just about smearing Brett Kavanaugh's reputation or even impeaching Brett Kavanaugh, but about putting an asterisk next to the entire Supreme Court. Explain that.
Well, this was actually an admission made by the attorney for one of the accusers, Christine Blasey Ford, who said that she and her client were motivated by support of abortion and a desire to make any ruling that in any way limits abortion on demand questionable, that it would put an asterisk next to Brett Kavanaugh's name. People are being pretty clear about how the anti-Kavanaugh campaign is not based on him so much as on their support for abortion through all 9 months of pregnancy. And so that was just the latest example of it, although these authors themselves, the New York Times authors, basically make the same concession in their writing of their, frankly, highly biased book that is supportive of abortion.
You recently tweeted regarding that book. You had an advanced copy. So I'm reading the new anti-Kavanaugh book by shockingly really biased reporters at the New York Times. All claimed anonymous sources are anti-Kavanaugh, while all but a tiny few on-record sources are downright effusive. Just interesting how highly they contradict each other. Give us some examples, if you would.
Well, it was interesting to look through this, where people would on the record praise Brett Kavanaugh's character from high school, college, law school, and beyond, with specific stories about what a gentleman he was and how people really liked him and found him helpful and just a man of good character. And then they would add this aside that others, however, said that they believed the allegations against him. Well, that's all fine and good, but you need to have more corroboration than just gossip from high school students who didn't like him or something. We reported in our book, Justice on Trial, we interviewed more than 100 people, including people who were close to Kavanaugh and close to his accusers, and we found that people spoke incredibly highly of him. I always remember this one woman saying there are maybe 5 men in her life who she would defend, and then she paused and said, maybe only one, meaning Brett Kavanaugh was of such exemplary character, and this this person, you know, he had dated her sister, so she knew him well, and she had such high regard for him that she was willing to defend him publicly. And we heard story after story, which is not to say that, you know, there was nothing there. We heard that he, you know, he enjoyed drinking in college and whatnot, and we tell all those facts in the story. But we interviewed people throughout his life and got a shockingly consistent story of his good character dating back to a pretty young age.
Who is Max Steer? What has he alleged about Kavanaugh? Is it credible?
After a year, these New York Times reporters were only able to dig up one new smear. And that new smear was that Max Steyer allegedly told some Senate Democrats that he had personally witnessed misconduct by Kavanaugh. Now, again, this is the thing that they forgot to mention that the alleged victim denies. But they also forgot to mention that Max Steyer and Brett Kavanaugh have a lengthy, contentious history. They've known each other since Yale. They were pitted against each other during the Whitewater proceedings when Max Steyer defended Bill Clinton, who, by the way, was accused of exposure. That was what led to the Whitewater investigation. And Brett Kavanaugh worked on the other side. So they've been against each other for a long time. And Steyer wasn't just some lackey on this. He actually was involved in the opposition research against Whitewater investigators and whatnot. It's not to say that he couldn't be telling the truth. It's just that this type of partisan motivation should have also been disclosed by the New York Times reporters and their editors.
So as it stands, you mentioned earlier, there are still calls for impeachment. That's a very high bar to reach with a Supreme Court justice. Who is pushing for this, and what are the reasons they're giving, if not the allegations that were recently made and now effectively retracted in the New York Times?
Right. I would say first and foremost, it's good to remember that the media are pushing this story in the same way that they've been pushing the impeach President Trump story. People maybe think of the media as helping Democrats, whereas in recent years we've seen a little bit of a power shift in the media kind of directing Democrats as opposed to following what they want. So it was really initially the media that started this, and then Democratic candidates picked it up from there. But even after the correction of this story, did the media then call these people and say, now would you like to retract since we have updated this story? Nope, they just kept pushing it. And in fact, there are new calls today. It's a curious strategy in that there is no more unifying event for Republican voters than what they saw Brett Kavanaugh subjected to. It is the hope of Democrats and the media that it will also be a mobilizing force for Democrats as they seek to take the Senate, take the presidency, and control the Supreme Court.
Is it a miscalculation, in your opinion, to continue to dig this up and then to pursue impeachment against Kavanaugh running into 2020?
I would say yes and no. It's a huge miscalculation in that it motivates Republicans, and I don't think they understand just how exasperated Republicans are with the media's practice of just running unsourced allegations against people with no concern for what it does to people. I also think it adds pressure to Senate Judiciary Committee officials and Department of Justice officials to finally hold some people responsible for what was done to Justice Kavanaugh last year. On the other hand, as we discussed, the goal is to tarnish the Supreme Court or to make people question its rulings if they are constitutionally based and not of the progressive mold where you invent new rights, such as a new right to abortion, which does not exist in the Constitution, but which the Supreme Court has asserted and reasserted. And so the idea is doing internal pressure on the court. That could work. It's certainly, we have a Chief Justice who seems susceptible to political pressure. I'm not sure if the other Republican-nominated justices are as susceptible, but it's not a strategy that comes out of nowhere. It's a strategy that comes from a place of knowing that it works, at least on one Supreme Court justice.
Molly Hemingway is our guest. She's a Fox News contributor and author of the new book, Justice on Trial, The Kavanaugh Confirmation and the Future of the Supreme Court. When we come back, do individuals in the media seem to be aware of how big a blow the New York Times story and retraction has been to their already damaged credibility? If you appreciate Issues Etc., talk radio for the thinking Christian, and Lutheran Public Radio, sacred music for the world, please include a bequest in your will or trust for these worldwide media resources. Bequests aren't subject to federal tax or capital gains taxes. Ensure your children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren the opportunity to listen by including a bequest in your will or trust for Issues Etc. and Lutheran Public Radio.
Memoria Press now offers 8 levels of the Simply Classical curriculum for children with special needs. These full-year packages help you teach reading, writing, arithmetic, art and music, poetry, science, history, Latin, classical and Christian studies in incremental and multisensory ways for mastery. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and enter promo code LPR9 to save on resources for your home or school.
Lutheranism in the Public Square. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Lutheran Federal Credit Union was formed to serve you and to serve the church. During September, when you open a Lutheran FCU loan or when you use your Lutheran FCU credit card for a qualifying amount of purchases, Lutheran FCU will give you cash back and give that same amount of money to their Ministry of the Month, Grace Place Wellness Ministries. Learn more at LutheranFCU.org, serving the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod community, Lutheran Federal Credit Union, LutheranFCU.org.
Register your high schooler today for Careers for Christ Weekend at Concordia University Chicago. From October 4th through 6th, spend the weekend with Lutheran youth, connect with CUC faculty, staff, and students, explore our Lutheran teacher education, DCE, deaconess, Director of Parish Music and Pre-Seminary Programs. Sign up now at cuchicago.edu/c4c. That's cuchicago.edu/c4c.
We're discussing two issues with Molly Hemingway of Fox News, a new book about Justice Brett Kavanaugh, and a New York Times story about a new alleged incident of sexual assault involving Kavanaugh. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Lutheran Federal Credit Union serves the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod community by offering checking and savings accounts, auto and mortgage loans, debit and credit cards, and more. Learn more at LutheranFCU.org. Lutheran Federal Credit Union, good for you, good for the church. LutheranFCU.org. Molly, do individuals within the media seem to be aware of what a blow the New York Times essay and its retraction has been to the already damaged credibility?
I mean, it's been a rough couple of years, hasn't it? We had the coverage of the 2016 campaign where most everybody in the media didn't understand the dynamics of what was causing people to vote one way or the other, and they just completely missed the most interesting story of a generation. And then they followed that up with the invention of a really ridiculous conspiracy theory that the reason why they missed the story is because Russians had tricked people or something. So they'd spent years on this Russia collusion conspiracy theory that was finally debunked with the end of the Mueller probe, showing that not only did Donald Trump not conspire with Russians to steal the election, literally no American that they could find had done so. And then they go now into these repeated Kavanaugh smears. I mean, it's almost hard to keep up with the errors, whether it's the Covington scandal. You know, CNN recently botched a story about the extradition of a spy. This New York Times failure, Bloomberg News tried to destroy someone because they failed to understand that he was joking about something on Facebook. It's just every day is a new example of lost credibility. But I think that because most journalists just speak with each other, they think they're doing a better job than they are, and they're not aware of what real people outside their bubble think about their journalism standards.
I mean, at some point, I'm thinking about maybe journalism professors who really spend their time, the best of them, trying to instruct people in how to do good reporting, have to be incredibly frustrated. I'm not a journalist. As a consumer of news, I'm deeply frustrated. How do you deal with this every day, Molly?
Well, it is exhausting. I will say that Carrie and I basically predicted what we just went through this weekend when we wrote Justice on Trial. We talked about the playbook employed by people who don't find the confirmation's conclusion to be the end of the story and that they would attempt to keep on rewriting history and pushing this false narrative that has no evidence in support of it, that Brett Kavanaugh is a serial abuser of women. So I'm not surprised, and that helps. I think being aware of what people are dealing with and getting out of the framework of thinking that the problem with the media is that they are biased, when really the problems are much, much deeper and evidence much more corruption that is industry-wide. So I think awareness is important, not giving media outlets that fail to uphold basic standards the credence that they so desperately want, and not treating them as if they are in positions of authority because they have lost that credibility that used to be ascribed to them. But really what I wish was that there was some kind of accountability board that would look at these things and actually issue some kind of internal professional punishment. People say, oh, of course these reporters and their editors are going to be punished for what they did. Really? I mean, it seems if past is prologue, they're going to get promotions and awards and that nothing will happen to them. Well, you know, maybe we'll see. Maybe they will do something that is actually what needs to be done. But nothing thus far, and no reason to think they will be held accountable.
There were Pulitzers handed out for reporting on the alleged Russian collusion, weren't there?
Yes, and in fact, after the story blew up, the defense that the New York Times gave for its failure to realize the big story that was in their lap, or their refusal to cover what they knew was the big story, which was this coordinated campaign of leaks to give the impression of a Russia conspiracy, they said, well, we won Pulitzers. It's like, you did, you shouldn't have. And even just that idea that the Pulitzer conveys respectability when it's given for false stories such as this. And CNN was given awards for its Kavanaugh coverage. You know, it's not just the Russia hoax. It's not just Kavanaugh. It's the 2016 campaign. It's every journalistic failure. Not only do people not get fired or given remedial training in journalism, they get awards, promotions, pay raises, transfers to better companies. That's why I say the corruption is industry-wide and needs to be dealt with the seriousness that it needs.
You said that before, you repeated it. It's not just bias, it's corruption. What do you mean by that in particular?
Well, there are really bad incentives. For instance, when someone gets a story wrong, nobody wants to call the other media outlet out because they want the credibility that they think that other media outlet has, or they want the TV time that that media outlet has. Everybody wants to be in the New York Times, so they don't hold them accountable for their failures. Or people want to be on TV, so they don't hold, you know, CNN accountable for their repeated massive botched mistakes. And then you also see that if you do tell the truth, if you do report the news accurately, you get sidelined or you get treated as marginal. If you stay in that group hive and you all repeat the same thing, no matter how absurd it is, and again, Russia is a great example of this, then you get rewarded. It's almost the equivalent of a bribe, that you get financial and professional rewards for not doing your job, for failing to think critically, for failing to analyze the facts, or just use common sense. That's how you get more money. That's how you get more prestige. And if you go against that, you get punished and you get treated by your peers as not as good as people who clearly botch stories again and again.
To what degree is the continued Kavanaugh issue in the media an attempt to discourage future nominees under President Trump?
Right. That's why, you know, sometimes people say, well, what's the big deal? Kavanaugh was confirmed. People won that battle. That's true, and it's important. It would have been important to not have him exit the confirmation process over false charges, or to see people not defend his honor because of this. But there are a lot of ways you can win a battle, and one of them is making it just impossible for decent people to serve in these public roles. And maybe people think, oh, I could handle it, but are they going to put their kids through this? They're out to destroy lives. It's not an issue of, well, I believe this person or I believe that person. We all should hold the same standards of demanding evidence before we believe accusations. That's how you take accusations seriously. It is a way to serve all your neighbors, accuser, accused, and otherwise, to hold those high standards. If you make it so that it's an impossibility to serve in this position, or that decent people don't want to for fear of how their lives will be destroyed, you can accomplish the goal of taking over the court to push a progressive agenda.
How does the journalistic community come back from this behavior that we've seen, especially exacerbated during the Trump era, Or do they?
I in no way expect this to happen, because very few people in the media seem to be even honest about the level of corruption and problems. But you look at something like the global soccer scandal, where there were FIFA officials coordinating with people or taking bribes for different things. You had an independent body come in and clean things up. You had prosecutions for actual law-breaking, and I'm not saying that the level of corruption we see in the media necessarily involves law-breaking, but certainly you need to have some outside body come in and give these people a firm dose of reality that they are destroying their industry. And in destroying their industry, they're actually causing harm to the republic. And it is important that we have a media that can be taken seriously, that when they say things, we can believe what they are saying, and that has good standards. And it's not to say that everyone has to claim their objective or anything like this, but we're at propaganda-type levels routinely, day after day. And that is dangerous for the civic health of the republic, and something really needs to be done by a lot of different people.
You are saying what many others have said, that the health of our republic requires a free press, but it also requires a press that is as credible as humanly possible, right?
Right. Thomas Jefferson said that if he had to choose between having a government or having a free press, he would choose the free press. But he said that that was based on the republic being fully informed and how important it was that people be fully informed. Well, when you are omitting key details of stories, or you're botching the entire premise of a story, or you're blaming people who had nothing to do with something for the result of something, that's not producing a well-informed republic. That's producing a grievously misinformed public. And that's just on specific little issues. What about the larger issues of failing to portray the big moral issues of our time with accuracy, or failing to accurately understand and present the way vast swaths of Americans believe on key issues, whether it's, you know, abortion or redefinition of marriage or other really foundational issues? That's not achieving what Thomas Jefferson wanted.
How do you respond to someone who says, well, Molly, the media is self-regulating because of the competition that's inherent in a 24-hour news cycle, and that it's self-correcting as well?
There is some truth to that, and I thank God, and I've started my own website with a few other people, The Federalist, which exists because we have a market that allows for different media outlets to rise up. We have broken a ton of stories. We did get the New York Times to issue a correction on this piece and did it within a day. And that is something that we were able to achieve because of not just the free market, but technological advances that enable those of us who work from home to be full participants in the news cycle. So that's true. It's also true, though, that corporations nationwide privilege these leftist media outlets, these major corporate media outlets, and they have basically blacklisted the financial support of media outlets that do not share a leftist narrative, particularly on social issues. And so there are some pretty big obstacles that are dealing with really difficult to change systems that keep the free press from being responsive to legitimate criticism.
Finally, what advice can you give to a Christian consumer of media who they want to be informed? They want to keep the Eighth Commandment. They don't want to bear false witness against their neighbors and explain everything in the kindest way. But they don't know who to trust in the news media.
Well, I actually think that the Eighth Commandment was a good one to remember, which when you think about protecting people's reputation, I think that also means demanding evidence before you believe something that is written or said about someone. And that's true regardless of their politics and regardless of, you know, your politics. It's something that we are all supposed to do to make sure that we are putting the best possible construction on people. I think having that standard and demanding that standard of our media outlets would have prevented a lot of what we saw with the attempt to destroy Justice Kavanaugh's life, the ongoing effort to destroy him and the reputation that he worked very hard to build up over decades. It's not just about our own reputations that we should be concerned about, but those of our neighbor, and that we should protect them when they are under attack.
Molly Hemingway is a Fox News contributor, senior editor of The Federalist, and co-author of the new book, Justice on Trial. When you purchase Justice on Trial using the Amazon link at our website, a percentage of your purchase will help support the worldwide outreach of Issues, etc. Just go to issuesetc.org, click Talk On Demand Archives, and look for Justice on Trial. Molly, thanks for the time.
Thank you.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll get a review of Stephen Hawking's final book, Brief Answers to the Big Questions, from Dr. Angus Manoj. We'll have Pastor Tom Baker lead us in a Sunday school lesson on the call of Abraham in Genesis chapter 12, and we'll respond to your email and the Issues Etc. comment line. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
College Preparation Station is proud to announce the opening of its first Missouri location, Creve Coeur. College Preparation Station provides ACT, SAT, PSAT instruction, and college scholarship guidance. Their new Creve Coeur branch is located at 11,500 Olive Boulevard. Learn more at cpsprep.com or call 314-750-5967. College Preparation Station in Creve Coeur, Missouri, and Maryville, Illinois. cpsprep.com.
Repentance and forgiveness, sin and grace, law and gospel. More than cliches, real preaching for real people in need of hearing the real Christ. Christ for you and the divine service at St. Paul Lutheran Church of Hamel, Illinois, where we gather every Saturday night at 6 and on the Lord's Day, Sunday mornings at 7:45 and 10. Look for the Church of the Neon Cross on I-55 between exits 30 and 33. Find us on the web, stpaullutheranchurchhamel.org. St. Paul Lutheran Church of Hamel, where there is the forgiveness of sins, life and salvation for the people of God.